Proper Sport at 6. You won't miss a minute, whether they matter or not.
Fire it, he's going to dummy, he's going to
yes!
win!
Yes!
Curry's over the line. No, he isn't. He's lost the ball.
He's off.
He's gone.
Go on, Johnson.
This is the home of full match commentary. This is Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire.
Our millions of listeners just had heart failure then for the second time in a week. Contrary to popular opinion, we are back to review the World Cup Grand Final with you here on Radio Yorkshire. And then Rich pressed the wrong button.
Brought the radio station.
Brought it to its knees. But we are back. Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire for another week. 6 until 8. Online at radioyorkshire.co.uk and via the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page as well. I want you to get in touch. England, fingertips away from winning the World Cup. Or were they a million miles away? What's your opinion? They didn't score a try in the final. But I'm sure if we'd have said Australia would have only got 6 at the start of kickoff on Saturday, we would have all have taken that. Does Wayne Bennett need to go? Or does he need to stay? Does Super League need to look at the way it makes up its season to help give England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales a better chance on the international stage? And is it now time for international football to become the biggest and best thing in our sport? At RL on RY on Twitter. You can get in touch via the Radio Yorkshire Facebook page. You know the drill. Make the most of it. The legend's back next week. You won't be able to get a word in edgeways. The one good thing about England losing the final is a legend kept his clothes on. Or so reports tell us. Good evening and welcome. It is Rugby League in Radio, on Radio Yorkshire. It has been a stressful week. Many of you will know why. But we are here doing what we do best, and that is talking all things Rugby League. Phil Kaplan is here. Phil, have you recovered from the disappointment, from the heartbreak of the weekend?
Probably not. It was epic. It was heroic. But I shall be haunted in my dreams by that.
Yeah, we can see it's on there. The fingertip
the ankle
from
tap
Dugan.
Away from winning the World Cup, maybe. I honestly think that England's performance was magnificent. I think you can look at all the chances that were created. There were only ever going to be 3 or 4 against a defence that only conceded 3 tries. That we couldn't take any of them said more about our execution rather than our ability to create. And Josh Dugan's flying ankle tap. Callum Watkins was away. We know the speed of Watkins. Had support either side as well if he couldn't have got there himself. And on such fine margins, we have lost the World Cup final. If this was a heavyweight boxing clash, we went the distance with the champion and lost on points. And I'll be honest, that's more than I thought we were going to do in this tournament.
Yeah, you say lost on points, probably a split decision, I think, if we're going to use a boxing analogy. But so near yet so far, and there's been a lot of speculation as to what maybe needs to happen from now. And these are all things we're going to be discussing tonight.
Yeah, I think it's mainly decision-making under pressure. I'm not sure that we have a competition on a week-to-week basis that breeds players that do that naturally. I think Wayne Bennett saw that as one of the issues that he needed to deal with as the coach of this group of players. And obviously having them together for a mid-season international helped get that over. Having them together for 6 weeks in this tournament helped them improve every time they went on the field. You wonder perhaps what might have happened if we could have found a way to get the players together maybe at the beginning of this season, not necessarily a camp in Dubai, but a way of getting the players together, of lessening the domestic impact in 2017 to give them the maximum chance of winning the World Cup. What I think we do have is a fantastic platform now to move forward. The next World Cup in 4 years' time is here. We've put down a marker with so many players from other sports and general sports watchers saying what a glorious attempt that was by England. We have to now put ourselves in a position whereby we can not only capitalise that from a profile point of view, but actually we can keep this group of players together, we can add to it, and we can win the World Cup in 4 years' time on home soil. That's the biggest thing that we should be trying to achieve at the moment.
Good stuff, thank you for that. Richard's here as ever.
Yes.
What do you make of it, Rich?
It is, as we've said a million times in a million different places, it is always the hope that kills you. It's never the losing in the first place, because you almost expect that. But it's when you think we could win and then we don't win and you go... Although there wasn't that same feeling as... Which was the Four Nations when Great Britain played Australia and got absolutely stuffed in the final. I think it was when Andy Fowle was still playing.
2005, I think.
When you thought, oh, yeah, we're going to win this final, yeah, yeah, and then got stuffed. And you thought, oh, no. At least we're closer than that. But not close enough. And it's just disappointing and, you know...
Is it disappointing? It's disappointing to lose because they played so well. And let's be honest, it almost went down to the very last play of the game for England to be in a chance of at least taking it to golden point. Did we honestly think, when we sat here 6 weeks ago, we examined the coach and the constitution of the squad that he'd picked, that England would be that close to winning the World Cup? And if we didn't, and if we're perfectly honest with ourselves, I don't think anybody did, then this has to go down as success rather than failure.
But is success getting to the final? No, it's not. That's a minimum requirement.
Success is incremental. And getting to the final for the first time in 22 years is success. Okay. Going so close to beating Australia, in Australia, on a ground where so many of their players have had success, to run them so close, even highlighting some of the players who, before this squad left the shore, lots of people were wondering why they'd been selected. I think we can hold our heads up. The competition over here has gained added respect. But what do we want from this competition to enable us to beat rather than compete with Australia?
Okay, let's get the view of the listeners. They've been getting in touch. Remember, if you are listening on the old Facebook page, give it a like, give it a share. If you're listening on Twitter, if you're with us on Twitter, please do retweet and share the link, however it all works. I've forgotten. It's been a busy week. What's happening, Rich?
Oh, the proletariat are out in force tonight, excited by things. Mary kicks things off with... I think she sent this message in every single week during the World Cup. Still believe Bennett left some better players at home, especially centres. Shenton would have made a huge difference.
Possibly. Possibly. Bateman, for all the stick he got, probably did in the final the job he was brought in to do, and that was to keep the others quiet.
Well, I think the England's attack has all been down the right, and I think in Callum Watkins and particularly Jermaine McGilvery, they've got two players that would get in any team in that tournament. So it makes sense that most of their threat has been down the right. What the left has had to do, particularly in the final, is stop the ball getting to Valentine Holmes. We'd seen in the quarter-final and the semi-final, he'd scored 11 tries. He didn't get one running opportunity. Now, obviously, if you're going to pick John Bateman in a centre position, and he clearly is not a centre, he's there to do a job for Wayne Bennett. Yeah. If that job is stop Australia scoring on the left-hand side, then the job was done. And yes, we can argue, we can go through every single player that played for England in that game. But the fact is that all 17 were heroic. All went out and did the job that the coach asked of them. And but for either drop balls in promising situations, kicks too early in a tackle count, or a wayward pass or an ankle tap, we're talking about the finest of margins that group of 17 very nearly got the job done. And rather than go through each one of them and say, oh, somebody else would have been better in their position, I think we should try and say this 17, wherever they play in the future, let's start with Josh Dugan. He's made the most important tackle in the final. Josh Dugan isn't a centre. Josh Dugan plays his football as a fullback. You get the best players in your squad and then you fit them into how you want to play. Mm. Wayne Bennett likes what John Bateman can do.
He also, in fairness, might have liked what Zakadik could do.
Yes,
but
and
was shorn of his services.
He might also feel that in 2 years' time or in 4 years' time, that if we're in that situation in a World Cup final, that Mark Percival will do the job that he wants him to do. But maybe he's needed to learn in that environment exactly what a coach like Wayne Bennett wants from him.
Tom mentions the aforementioned Zach. Says, considering we had players playing out of position, Hardacre unavailable due to his stupidity and players pulling out, I'm proud of the effort this year. If we want to build for the next World Cup, then for me, Bennett has to pass the reins to Daryl Powell and start preparations now. Also, it's insane that most of those players only have 8 weeks as a pre-season for the new season.
I mean, that's something we'll come on to later. The old break and everything that they get. I want to really first, I'll concentrate on the game and then maybe look at the after effects of what we've had and what we've seen. What did you make of the game as a whole, Rich, and the performances of the England team?
I enjoyed watching it. I'm just trying to find out if Chris Hynington's retired, because Tom's just said, "Oh, no more Chris Hynington." I thought he played okay.
No, he's signed for Newcastle. Newcastle Knights.
Now, do you mean internationally?
I thought Chris Hynington played well in the role. He's certainly better than the English-born second rounder who came off the bench.
And the one thing we haven't said at the moment is we didn't have Sean O'Loughlin, who pulled out the day before. Now, we've been so close to beating Australia without one of the players who is absolutely integral to the way we want to play. So I think, again, when you asked us last week at the end of the programme, will England win? And I said I'd be confident more confident that they would if Sean O'Loughlin was playing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't play, but we nearly won without him. That's a massive kudos to the 17 guys that played. But I'm not sure that you do change the coach. I think we talk a lot about change. We talk about change of structure and change of the number of teams, change of where we're going to play this game geographically. I think that international football, particularly played at the highest level, is different to anything we see on a week-to-week basis at club football. And there isn't the space, there isn't the time, there isn't the number of chances. Changing the coach doesn't change the players and the need to play a certain way in a final. So I think now is a time for stability, for sticking with a guy who... I haven't heard a single England player, even those who weren't in the 17 on a regular basis, say that this hasn't been a valuable and worthwhile experience under Wayne Bennett. And he will want some assurances if he is to carry on in the job. And I think the game here needs to decide what is the priority over the next 4 years. If it is genuinely to win the World Cup, then I think Wayne Bennett is the coach that can deliver that. But he's going to want to have his players more often so that he can work on them and instill in them the traits that he believes they need to do what they have just so very nearly done.
Everyone's a critic, aren't they, Andy?
Andy's getting laid in your ear, Phil. He really is laying it.
I'd read his tweet, but even though we're only on the internet these days, we still can't say those words.
No. He's saying we've got no halfback combination.
But why does changing the coach give us a halfback combination?
It's a separate argument.
Is Luke Gayle not going to be a better player from having played in this tournament? Therefore, the answer is to keep playing Luke Gayle.
I'm not arguing.
I'm just saying that.
Our new national sport is it's all Luke Gayle's fault. He's the official. And look, he did not turn up in the grand final, but neither did the rest of the cast of the team as well. We can't pin that on Luke Gayle.
Luke Gayle needs to play in games like the grand final and the World Cup final nearly every week in domestic competition. That's not his fault that he doesn't. But the more he's exposed to it, the better he'll play. I wouldn't blame Luke Gayle for our defeat. Right. I thought the kick that he put in right at the end was probably more out of frustration and fatigue and desperation.
It was about 10 seconds after I'd sent a tweet defending him, so it was really badly timed, that, Luke.
He won Man of Steel because all the players who actually pay attention to these things...
There is a much, much bigger issue here that we touched on last week, and that is if you want to change things, you want a new generation of players to come through that can play at the very highest level, the first thing you've got to do is retain those players. The loss of Callum McLellan is a big, big issue for Super League. He was the England Academy captain. He's 17 years old. He's the kind of bloke that the next World Cup, or more likely the World Cup after that, is your future Luke Gayle, who you can start instilling the kind of habits that you need to win a World Cup now. He doesn't play in this sport anymore. That is a massive issue.
Where are the halfbacks coming from? Because when players get injured in key positions at clubs, they don't promote their young academy potential starlets. They could fail. They could play their first game in Super League and be rubbish. But they're not given that chance to, because they'll, you know, move players from position and sign another Aussie or whatever.
And this is not about a style of play. because you can only play sometimes how the opposition also allows you to play. The Australians conceded only 3 tries in this competition. Their defence was magnificent. And you have to wait and be patient and find a way to break it down. And that isn't just throwing the ball around. We created 4 clear-cut opportunities that would have won this game. We didn't take them. It's okay. Not that we don't make them. Mm. It's that we didn't take them.
I agree. Right, but a lot of people go, Luke Gayle, Luke Gayle, Luke Gayle. No. Right, OK, who should have played instead of Luke Gayle that would have won England the World Cup? Because I'm not saying there's anyone better than him at the minute.
I guarantee one of the first names that will come up will be Danny Maguire. And people will say, Danny Maguire, because he won the grand final with Leeds. Yeah, but for a lot of last season, Danny Maguire wasn't the Danny Maguire you all think he was. Because he isn't anymore. That's why he's at Hull Kingston Rovers.
I think it's purely about...
Cheers, Barry. First message.
It's about patience. We're building something. Every player at the end of this competition who played for England is a better player than they were at the start of this competition. Why would you throw that away?
OK.
I enjoyed the final. I thought it was good.
It was fantastic.
The great thing about international rugby league in general is you can get something from almost any game you get. If it's a blowout, you can see some great... You know, Valentine Hunt has scored 11 tries in 2 games, scored none in the final. But it was entertaining to see him in full flight and the Australians provide those opportunities for him. But what a great defensive display it was from both sides. And this is why I think... I know far less about rugby league than Tony Smith. Obviously, he's a former international coach. I bet... It was an easy call for the BBC to get him on the phone on Sunday morning on that risible programme, Sports Week, which, you know, utterly dreadful programme. Oh, let's get someone to talk. We're all happy. The Rugby League World Cup's been a success. Everyone's fairly positive about it. Let's get someone on to say something negative, because he did on Radio Manchester the other week. And here comes Tony Smith to say England, the result flattered them. It didn't, because England's defence only gave Australia 2 chances in the whole game, one of which they scored, the other of which was an obstruction. Now, that's a credit to the England defence. Whether they didn't score any points going forward, that's something we need to work on.
We had Jermaine McGilvery intercepting. He could have gone the length of the field. We had Callum Watkins perhaps timing his pass to Jermaine McGilvery a couple of seconds too late, which didn't give McGilvery the space. We had Watkins himself, who was clean and through and is the fastest man in that England back division, being ankle tapped when he had support on his outside and his inside. And we had a forward pass in the last set of 6 that, had it been allowed to go on, McGilvery was in the clear again with players on the inside of him. That's the English style of play. We broke down the best defence in the world on enough occasions to win the game. I don't think you can look at individual performances and say that was why we lost. What I also think is very important, and I would disagree with Lord Schofield if he was here. He's certainly been lauding it, hasn't he? But He has put in his column today that it was a poor Australian team. I'm not buying a single second of that, I'm afraid. They were the 17 best players in the best competition in the world, 3 of whom were generational players. For us to come so close to beating them is heroic in the extreme. Do not lay England's defeat at the fact that Australia aren't as good as previous Australians. That was a fantastic green and gold team. And when Cameron Smith comes out and says, that's one of the toughest games I have ever played in, when Mal Meninga says, that's test football like it used to be, when people are comparing the intensity of that game to what Origin is, and let's face it, that's the pinnacle of the sport, whether we like it or not, and what we're trying to change with this World Cup, then I don't see how you can criticise the quality of the opposition.
Let's get some reaction from our listeners. What are they saying tonight?
Many various things. A, who should we have taken instead of Luke Gayle? Stand up, everybody. Mark Snead. Here's Ben. Snead is a proven big game player and would have been less targeted in defence, as he is a better defender than Gayle. I would have given him a go. That's Ben. Also on the Mark Snead bus, if you will, is Con. Snead wouldn't be better than Gayle. At least he has a good kicking game and has a record of stepping up in big games. Luke Gayle was embarrassingly out of his depth. The Luke Gayle loving will continue
I watch Super League every week, and it's a no-brainer for me which one you take. An absolute no-brainer.
When Graham Onions, the England cricketer, was injured, he was England's best bowler because he wasn't playing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I also think it goes back to something that we said at the beginning when we discussed the England squad, that 20 of the 24 virtually pick themselves. But until we get 50, and we can argue for three programmes that Wayne Bennett's made the wrong choice.
I would
that's
argue...
That's not the issue for me.
You go back and listen to Lee Radford's press comments after the last two seasons, and I would say 10 times he's come out and says his halfbacks haven't run the game how he wanted it to be run.
Absolutely.
And when his own coach is saying that, then I'm not so sure he's shooing everyone makes him out to be.
And what this 6 weeks has shown us is that there is a huge step up from club level to the very, very top of international level. To when you're playing, I was going to say the Tier 1 nations, but obviously we haven't played the Kiwis because they weren't good enough. But and I think you have to learn how to play these games. And the more internationals we can play, possibly at the expense of the structure of the domestic competition, because for me, that's the only way that we can match the Aussies. You've got Cameron Smith, president of the Players Union in Australia, who have just come up with a collective bargaining agreement that has brought more money into the sport for the players than ever before, standing up at the end of this game saying, I think we should play less NRL games so we can play more matches like this. This is a change in the dynamic. If he's saying that about a competition that has less regular season rounds than we do and doesn't have the Challenge Cup, we need to be debating this.
Mm. How does he look so well, Cameron Smith?
When he plays 80 minutes of every game. And 50,
why does he never get cracked?
Well, you see, we had that chance early in the game to have a big fight, didn't we?
Yeah, just you look at him. He doesn't even. He's not like a super. He is a super athlete, but he's not a super athlete, is he? You see him after with his shirt on, you think, you just look like a normal bloke. Well, why are you so good?
He's known as the accountant because he ticks off doing the right things.
Does my head in.
The accountant.
Right, OK, lots of interaction coming in. Keep it coming in. If you're listening, watching on Facebook, please, please, please share, like, let people know we're here. No holidays, no rest for the wicked is the new slogan on this show.
Con says, people would like... I'll have a bit more time for Luke Gayle if he wasn't so arrogant. That's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Luke is a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy. And if people didn't like him, the players would not have voted him for Man of Steel. Right?
So I've seen him in the past.
Unless you know him and he's been arrogant in your company, I think that's a poor thing to say.
By the way, you are allowed to constructively criticise players on this programme. I know some people don't like that. Even if you've played rugby league or not, you are allowed to.
Well, you criticise, but I think to call him arrogant... No, I'm not having that.
Andy says, we are not good enough in the halves. You want to blame anyone? Blame the RFL for scrapping the academy level and grassroots. We have quality talent, but the whole comp and structure is wrong. Fat.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Where are the halfbacks?
Where are they? They're all playing rugby union.
Super League salary cap says Andrew should be incentivised to play more academy players to get more money if you do.
I think it already is.
Well, maybe that needs to be weighted even further. So that teams like Leeds don't play Joel Moon at half-back, they play young Jordan Lilley. Or teams like Warrington don't play Kurt Gidley, they play Declan Patton. Maybe things like that need to happen.
Maybe we need to bring back an England programme that allows those players to also play at a representative level beneath England, which I think there are plans to do for the European Championship at the end of this year.
Good stuff.
Of course, the great thing is, now following the World Cup, we can all go back to hating players from different clubs who we're pretending to like for 6 weeks. So
some of the pretenders not being too believable.
Luke Gayle's hard done by in the eyes of Jack. Yes, kicking on the second tackle in the last 4 minutes was daft, yes. But had it come off, he'd have been hailed a genius. Still questioning it myself, but we had other chances. Better than that one to get on the board. Quality team performance, great tournament. And looking forward to the next one. So positivity.
It's like you said, Phil, making decisions under pressure. I'm sure he thought, this'll annoy him back home when I kick it here. Yeah. This is going to do everyone's head in.
He must have seen something on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. And more than anything, if you've got six tackles left, it's your last six tackles of the game. Normally you would use at least five of them. So to kick early is the bit that I don't understand. I don't think you'd have found Cooper Cronk doing that. But that's because Luke Gayle needs to be put under pressure in those situations more often.
And this was a problem with England, I guess, during the tournament, but certainly during that match, when we had the ball in the Australian 20 in the first half and came around, passed it to Ryan Hall when the pass wasn't on the first
tackle.
The
one pass he got, we didn't want him to get.
Yeah.
By the way, I actually thought Hall, McGilvray, and to a certain extent Widdop were fantastic at the bat for England.
Does anybody genuinely think that a player hasn't got better as the 6 weeks has gone on, who's been used regularly? Obviously, we're not talking about the fringe players. I just think the performances that we saw, certainly against Lebanon, against France, against PNG, I think they were building into the ability to hold on against Tonga and to take Australia, the best team in the world with the access to the highest number of quality players in the world, to within the last set of the game. I'm not sure why we're criticising anybody. This is a huge leap forward for England Rugby League.
Well, Robert's found a new scapegoat, so gun use of Luke Gayle. You can rest easy for a moment, because Robert says, is Tom Burgess a better player? He drops the ball too much. Bennett said this before the tournament, so why pick him? Interestingly, it was the most insightful piece of commentary in the whole World Cup when Ian Millwood, when he came on, said he drops the ball at least twice a game in the NRL. Mm. Did it three times.
And he does play under pressure.
Mm. You wonder if he had a different surname, would he be a...
I don't know. I think he's... I think, you'd need to forensically analyse the game, but I think he does take a lot out of defenders with his runs. But, you know, it's rocks or diamonds. Sometimes in those runs, you run the risk of losing the ball. And you know, yes, annoyingly, he did it three times in really promising positions. But overall, I think Tom Burgess has enhanced his reputation. I think Tom Burgess is a better Tom Burgess than we saw in the Four Nations last year. Okay. And I think being in that environment with Wayne Bennett has allowed some of these players to experience what it takes to be the best in the world. But you can't go from being also-rans this time last year, when we were roundly criticising England's performances in the Four Nations, to toppling the best in the world. It is an incremental process.
Very good.
David says we do brilliantly holding them to six, but all the effort in defence seemed to drain the playmakers of imagination in attack. We didn't sustain pressure with repeat sets. Easier said than done, though. And rest easy, Tom Burgess, because we're now going to kick Phil. Knight says, how long before Phil uses the defeat as a reason to stop relegation and kick championship clubs out of the cup? Lots of opportunistic comments from journalists with agendas today, including the legend. I must have missed all these things. I should say at this point, I've mentioned the media. People who were criticising the media profile of the World Cup last week, including prominent current and former politicians, obviously got too much time on their hands these days. The people who are out there covering the World Cup are doing the best they can, but with the best word in the world, the Daily Telegraph ain't going to cover the Rugby League World Cup. The Daily Mail ain't going to put, you know, an 8-page pull-out together. And the thing that really wise me up is these people who then moan about this, but then get annoyed because it's in the Sun. You can't pick and choose who covers your sport.
Yeah.
You know, and you all had the ability in Parliament to put pressure on these people.
There is a much bigger issue about the media, and that is that over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, very few, if any, newspapers now have a rugby league correspondent. And that's the issue with the profile of the sport domestically and how it has declined over the last 5 or 6 years. This World Cup was never going to change that. And I think that people also consume their news and information in a much different way than they used to. It's not all about how many column inches you have anymore. And I genuinely do believe that the coverage that we have had has been commensurate with the size of the sport that we are, and that some of the stuff we've had, like being on national radio stations, I think TalkSport have done a fantastic job. They've no rights to cover the competition, but you know they've had players on live from Australia. I think national BBC radio, Chris Evans today was even talking about what a fantastic game it's been. Gets 8,500 listeners on a morning.
8.5 million?
8.5 million listeners. You know, we have actually made inroads in areas how people now consume the news. It's not just in the broadsheet newspapers.
Okay. Yeah, I felt a bit sorry for some of the journals. They got a bit of a kick in some of them over the weekend. They've done a great job. We're not certainly not criticising them.
No.
Right, more yes. Social media.
Jack says, it's Kevin Brown's turn now. Brown's only not copying any stick because he got dragged off. Sneed over Brown 100% and Hal Shaw didn't get a ticket on the plane, I don't know. And I'm not an FC fan, says Jack. Bentley would have picked Snead. He's got two Lancelot trophies, therefore he's a proven big game player and isn't fazed by pressure like Gale appears to be. Snead is also better in defence than Gale, meaning he wouldn't have been targeted like Gale did, resulting in being less fatigued in attack. But we'll never know.
No.
There must be a reason why, A, the players made Luke Gale the man of steel over the whole season, well, 23 rounds, and why Wayne Bennett picked him and didn't have Mark Snead anywhere near the squad.
Okay.
It's a mystery.
Good stuff.
Graham says, I predict confidently that England will soon revert back to Great Britain and will win the World Cup on home soil. These current players will only get better. So which players from Wales, Scotland and Ireland, Graham, would get into these?
I think you'll find the World Cup will always now be the home nations. Great Britain will only come back for tours.
Steve says, good game for Chris Hill. He did have a good game.
He did, and had we at the start of the tournament, he shouldn't have been on the plane, according to a lot of people.
Close to being the man of the match, I would have said. He was absolutely outstanding, gave it everything. Probably James Graham was the best player on the field, but Chris Hill was not far behind him. And you're absolutely right. If you'd have asked us, should he have been on the plane even out there, we would have said no on the form that he showed during last season. If Wayne Bennett is your coach, Wayne Bennett is going to play a certain style of rugby with a certain set of players. We were an ankle tap away from that selection and that way of playing working.
Very good.
Someone has mentioned, where's he gone? Jack, about why Sky didn't take any notice until England were in the final. Sky Sports News generally don't cover things they don't have the rights to. They never have done.
When it's like Sky, the Champions League. Yeah. Don't exist now, Jack.
When Sky didn't have the F1, they never mentioned F1, but as soon as they got the rights, they did. So, you know, it is what it is.
I think they've had their particular pundits like Terry O'Connor and Barry McDermott. John Wells has put a piece on the Sky Sports website about the final. They have covered it, but it's been very low key and it's been through their rugby league department. But why should they? They made a bid for the rights and didn't get it.
I'm sure BT on their programme Rugby Tonight, which I'm sure has lots of rugby league discussion on, mentioned nothing to do with the rugby league work. I didn't watch it because I'm not interested in watching, you know, some rah-rah propaganda.
I think it's safe to say that if England had won, they would have covered it, because it is a news story then. And it's safe to say that Sky Sports and Sky Sports News did have contingency and backup and were even at Headingley for the final to get instant reaction. So I don't think you can expect a lot more. I think what you might find is that the NRL will be on Sky next year.
OK.
That seems to be that the jungle drums are getting louder on that one, aren't they, which is interesting, which is not a bad thing, he says, having cancelled Premier, having jumped through a million hoops to do so this weekend.
Go on, then.
Why are George Ford and Owen Farrell playing rugby union, says Liam, when their dads are rugby league legends? How many more players have switched coasts that we don't know about? Money talks. We don't have that money, do we? We need to get that money from somewhere.
Well, we're going to talk about that in hour number two, because this is a big bone of contention I have with people going, oh, great audience on the BBC. Yes, great audience, can't deny that. What money does that bring into the sport?
I think the important thing it can do, because I don't think you would get that level of viewership even if you moved it to a commercial station who would pay possibly to have the rights, is the ability to have a major sponsor on the front of your shirt, because you can say to them, look, you're going to be hitting 1.5 million, 2 million people. We have not sold our England jersey. And
well, you can't even buy... Can you buy an England jersey these days?
I've only seen it online.
And to me, that's the issue. That if you know you're going to be on the BBC, if you know you're going to be in a World Cup, if you know there's a good chance you're going to get to the World Cup final, that piece of space on the front is commercially viable because of the number of people that are going to see it over an 80-minute period. I'm not sure we've done that. In fact, I'm sure we haven't done that.
I know Sky are talking about the Ashes in cricket, but that's also slightly higher profile than the Rugby League World Cup.
Well,
but not spending hours talking about it, not doing special programmes on it, because they haven't got the rights.
Exactly.
And that's
and
how
a lot, a lot of their coverage is still photographs as well. They're not showing live action.
No, because they haven't got...
David Taylor's made a good point there. I've just seen that one come in, about Sam Tompkins.
I should have gone to play fullback and Widdop moved to the halves. I thought Widdop was more effective
I think
at one. But
as soon as Hardacre didn't go, Tompkins should have gone. That is my opinion. It shows that we're not all anti-Wigan on this show.
No.
Not all of the time.
Also not.
He should have gone, for me. I'll go back again. The 25 grand that Lomax got, he did all right, but Johnny Lomax is not going to win you a World Cup.
I think that we mentioned it when the squad was selected, and we knew then that obviously the Hardacre option had been lost, was that you do need players that know how to play the Australian style of play, because you've got to beat it. You've got to know what it is to be able to beat it. And interestingly enough, it's not them rushing up in defence. They actually stand back a little bit. They give you more room to play. They ask you to come to them rather than they meet you. And it's a different style of play. It's not even what Luke Gale is used to on a week-to-week basis. You have to put him into that environment for him to become used to it. But Sam already was, because even though he didn't play as many games with New Zealand Warriors as he would have liked, he had the week-to-week intensity of playing against that unyielding defence and how to unlock it.
Tomkins, in my opinion, is he might have lost the pace that he, you know, that raw pace he had when he went to the NRL. He might have lost that, but I think he's a lot better player now than he was. I think defensively he's better.
Absolutely. And it's the ability to read the game and link in. You don't need to be fast if you've got Callum Watkins and Jermaine McGilvray outside you.
Yeah.
You need to engineer the space for them to do what they can do. And yes, I think perhaps unless he wasn't fully fit, an option. But
indeed.
I still say that the guys that were out there on Saturday are beyond the fact. You can criticise them all you want. I'm not sure we could have played any better than that.
No.
We created four opportunities.
If we'd have said Australia
and
get
we didn't
six,
take them.
If they got six on Saturday, every man, woman, child, dog, whoever else is watching the game would have gone, right, let's see what happens.
But more importantly, we took them to the last set of six in a World Cup final in Brisbane, where apart from 2008, where they had an aberration, most of the players that play in that team have had success on a regular basis.
Very good. Right.
I'll leave the stuff about sponsorship until after after 7 o'clock. Howard's just...
Has he hit the nail on the head?
Well, I don't know. Danny says, our best player probably worked harder in defence than anyone else, brackets Widdop, compared to Kronk, who played in a dinner jacket. That's why we struggle in the opposition 20. But on the whole, I don't think anyone can have a dig at that performance. Proud of 1-17.
Yeah, McCranny speaks for quite a lot of people there.
Going forward mid-season, says Dean, to have a two-week rep break. Let Australia have a State of Origin game in week one, while the other sides play international games. And in week two, have the Kangaroos playing a match against England or New Zealand or even Tonga. Well, we have to make the importance of international matches above Origin. South Wales versus Queensland 1 week, Australia versus England the next week. Sounds brill. But I think the Australian TV companies and the NRL would like three games between New South Wales and Queensland as well.
I think we need to earn the right for international rugby to be seen to be a higher pinnacle than playing state rugby. At the moment, we've started to turn that wheel a little bit with this tournament, which is fantastic. I go back to the fact that the most important thing is player buy-in, because I think they can change the agenda. And Cameron Smith coming out and saying that he wants to is the first step in that. There's one Origin game now that is being played on a weekend next year. That is going to allow all the nations other than Australia to play in an international window. There still seems to be some work to be done over here. There's some confusion about whether that aligns with our window. The only fixture charts I've seen have got us playing the Challenge Cup quarterfinal on that weekend. And obviously the quarterfinal stage is when the top teams come in, so that would be all of your England players, you would assume. So unless we're now going to move the Challenge Cup quarterfinal to the 1st of June, which would probably mean 2 weeks between rounds and then 9 weeks till the next one, which would be a farce. But if we are going to have an international weekend, we've got to make sure that the NRL clubs release all the players who aren't playing State of Origin. And that's where the lobbying from the players needs to come. That's where Andrew Fifita and Jason Tamalo need to say, we don't want to sit on our backsides this weekend. We want to be pulling on that Red of Tonga again. We want to be playing Samoa on that weekend. We have got an opportunity, I think. The only fixture that hasn't been announced is England against Fiji. They're the opposition I think we should be playing. They haven't been told they've got a fixture yet. They've now made three World Cup semi-finals. In terms of the opposition we should be playing, the attraction they've got. Imagine if the Fijian team came over here in June, sang their hymns, did their cultural challenge, had the kind of wonderful players that we saw playing for them, you know, Jared Hayne coming over and orchestrating them, and we announced that game now and it was at home. and we took it perhaps to a development stadium like a Bristol, where we're hoping to have a team in 2019, the following year, or we wanted to take something down to the south of England, because at the time of the autumn games, there's rugby union being played in the capital. That's what we should be doing on the back of this World Cup, absolutely this week now, not some notional idea that England will be playing New Zealand for a fourth time in Denver.
Or do we need to get, I know we spoke before about getting it to expansion areas, but do England need to play a game in front of 50,000 people that put some money in the coffers, that then they go back to the clubs and go, right, this is why we're having international rugby, there's your little bit. And this is going to pay for the break whenever the guys go, whatever. I don't know, but I just think need to maximise.
But on the back of the World Cup that we've had, and the way that nations like Tonga and Fiji have now shown us there aren't three anymore at the top.
No, I think that's fair.
That if you were to announce, you know, before Christmas, so that people could buy tickets as a Christmas present, that England were playing Fiji, let's say at the Emirates Stadium, a venue that we haven't been at before, where you could get 50,000 people in. On the back of the footage that we've seen of this World Cup and the way the Fijians have played and what they bring to the sport, I think you could sell 50,000 tickets.
OK.
I know it's not official, and it's just scuttlebutt in the paper today, but if we're going to play New Zealand in a mid-season international in North America, why aren't we playing it in New York, where we're supposedly having a team, or Toronto, where there is a team, or Hamilton, where there might be a team, but in Denver, Colorado?
I just think we make it difficult for ourselves. There is no history of a rugby league audience in Denver, Colorado.
Well, therefore, the only reason we should be going, and I don't, this might be why we are going, is because someone said, here's £1 million, won't you come and play at our stadium? Maybe that's happening.
I would rather see England play Fiji in London with 50,000 people in the stadium and it earning £1 million.
OK. Well, the stadiums are available.
Yeah, not the Olympic Stadium, though. Ben has mentioned it, Mick as well. The news I'm going to get to Origin is a properly executed exile series, says Mick, and Ben says, wouldn't it be great if we had Origin series Yorkshire versus Lancashire? But would it be any good? Because it wasn't when it was back 15 years or so ago, was it?
Has the mentality towards it changed, whereby there's a realisation we actually need maybe something like this?
Maybe we need something, but not that, because the problem with that is mainly, more than anything else, is the perspective of it.
I think what we need is to build on what we've had out of this World Cup, and that is we have had a really credible island that I think a lot of people would like to see play England. I think we've work to do in Scotland and Wales, but obviously those nations had players that didn't play for them, big top name players who could be available if the series was at home. There is going to be a European Championship at the end of 2018. To me, that's what you focus on. You get the players of heritage and origin playing in that. You get some of those games played in those countries. That is far more valuable and of legacy value than Yorkshire playing Lancashire.
Should the England Knights be given a different name just because of the perception of that as well? Because obviously England are going to play New Zealand at the same time.
And the plan is, it's not signed off, so again, it's partly speculation, but I think the idea is that England will pick a large squad of probably 30 or 40 players, and they will be directed to some of those games. So if you're coming back from injury, or if you have a form issue, you may be playing first of all in the European Championship, but if you have a good game in that, you'd be called up to play against New Zealand. So the idea would be that because England have access to more players than Scotland or Ireland or Wales or France or Italy, that they would spread that squad, but it would all be brand England.
Right. Cool. Look, TI wants to know when the legend's back. Next week. All being well. Next week.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Rob, talking about the academies and where the players coming from. Where did the Rhinos' golden generation come from? Shipping youngsters out to Championship and League One teams doesn't work, in his opinion. Blood them in your own senior team, playing your club's tactics. I guess this also stretches back to not having enough players, doesn't it? Because if those players aren't at... I don't know, I'll pick Oxford because they don't exist anymore, rather than upsetting people. If team players don't go and learn to Oxford, where do Oxford find their players from?
But I think the issue goes even further back than that. What is the quality of player coming into the academies at the moment? Are there enough of them? Are they sufficiently good enough? And again, we mentioned it, but the issue to me is that if the England Academy captain can be so easily picked off by a rugby union nation, that's an issue that we as a sport have to address now. We cannot afford to lose people like Callum McClelland.
And as long as the Scottish Rugby Union is massively successful at club level, we've only got two professional teams, is it, in the pro or whatever it is.
And whatever money we've got and however we're going to share it around, retaining the best of your young talent, particularly in a half-back position, has to be key.
It's all about money, isn't it?
It's how you spend your money. It's what you decide to spend it on.
But then it comes back to how do you make money? You make money by getting more people to more games. You make money by getting better TV deals. You make money by getting more sponsorship for the products you've got.
Or even getting more people to less games because it becomes more of an event.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of attendances, Kev says, I thought England did okay. The biggest disappointment was the attendances in Australia. Never, ever let them have any more World Cups.
I agree with that. But I think the proof will be in what the accounts say. If it was justified that they got massive payments to take games elsewhere that overcompensated for the gate receipts, then have they made a good business decision?
Well, and it also depends what they got from Channel 7, because one thing that has held up are the viewing figures. So people have sat at home and watched International Rugby League in Australia. It's not that they don't like the game. It's just that they didn't go to the game. They chose to watch home. Part of the reason for that is that we haven't been very good for 45 years.
Mm. Are we good now, though?
Can't we blame someone else?
We are good now, though. I think if the population of Brisbane had realised how much of an event that was going to be on Saturday, and how close the game was going to be, how exciting it was going to be, a lot more would have gone. If you were to play that final now, a lot more tickets would be sold. But we had to prove we were good enough.
And we've all learned a new phrase we've all learned in this World Cup is cultural challenge. Let's enjoy the pre-match cultural challenge.
Do we need one? Do England need one?
Well, there's old videos, isn't there, of them doing... on the, what was the ship they went on? Was it Indomitable
Indomitable.
To Australia doing the practicing some kind of weird hacker-esque thing on the ship? And it didn't seem to work, so I think we're better just, as long as we don't read poems like the Australians do, we're going to be okay. Just, you know, would you trust any of our players reading poems?
No.
In fact, I'd get James Graham to read it because he's brilliant. He's the best orator in the squad. Well,
but there'd be a swear word in it, though. Yeah. That's the only thing.
Well,
nothing better in sport these days than commentators having to apologise for any errant words you may or may not have heard. I missed it.
Or partway through the poem at the start, rugby league is a family game comes up.
I miss James Graham's foul mouth, four word outburst, as it's probably been described in the Daily Mail today. So sadly, I missed that. But
he's had a lot of support, hasn't he?
Yeah, because people generally just go,
He's absolutely right to defend his position that he shouldn't be held accountable for what he says in the heat of battle if it involves a swear word. If it's an insult, that's different. But if you're going to have a referee's mic on in the middle of the kind of battle that he was at the heart of, don't be surprised if somebody says something that perhaps you think they shouldn't. Yeah. Anyway, he could claim it was after the watershed because it was only the morning here, it wasn't there.
Fair dues, fair. I think you're clutching at straws. Right, OK, lots have gone.
Yeah, Aaron Bauer.
Yes, friend of the show.
Done lots of good articles in The Guardian. As we say, as of all the journalists out there and the ones who've been left here have done some great work over the past 6 weeks, and long may those news editors at all these publications continue to get them to write these words and people to comment on them. And he says, regarding the McClelland debate, this is the lad who's gone from Castleford to Scotland. Radical idea, perhaps, but what about introducing a quota by where 1-2 or however many players in the match day 17 must be Academy produced? Certainly affords more opportunities to youngsters. Why not?
It does. It would need tinkering with, though, wouldn't it? Because Leeds are better say, well, Callum Watkins was in the thing or whoever. Would you say under 19 players, or for instance,
under 23 or something?
So yeah, some mileage in that certainly. But again, it's how you get that in, isn't it?
But it's also about what we pay them, because even if I know that certain of the top players are getting these £25,000 ambassador payments, I'm not sure that money keeps them in the sport.
Well, it's interesting that two of the players that got them, Mike McMeekin and Lomax, had very limited, and that's not a criticism of the guys.
No, and it might be that that's part of their education. Being in that squad might make Mike McMeekin a better player. He's not played rugby league for that long in his lifetime, so it's a big step up. But what might be better is if some of that money is directed to some of the kids. And if we've identified them on our programme as being good enough to captain their country, we need to find a way of keeping them.
Craig Harrison, who is, of course, McClellan's agent, has issued a warning saying that more players would likely follow suit and look at that. He said, we must try and secure our best talent by creating a vibrant under-18s competition and a reserve competition. The international game for youngsters also needs improvement. Whose phone's ringing?
Oh.
Is it you, Phil?
It was.
Oh,
mine's on silently.
Find him half his
feet. Nobody rings me.
Can someone? What is half of zero? The international game for youngsters needs improvement. We need facilities and a competition worthy of these the effort these kids put into becoming professionals.
Rob says, Sky used to televise academy games. This would incentivise clubs to have a strong academy team and concentrate on developing young players. I appreciate the difference in men versus boys, but is the value of playing a lower standard senior rugby better than developing young talent altogether? I used to enjoy watching those games. But an old friend of mine was playing for Wakefield's academy at the time. He got ankle tapped very much in the manner of Colin Watkins, and we mercilessly ripped it at him for weeks, having seen him do that on the telly. But yeah, I wonder what's going to happen next year, because obviously you've got the Women's Super League launching, or continuing rather, a bigger, more expanded Women's Super League. And I note with interest yesterday, because I'm in semi-retirement on Sundays these days, that Sky Sports had, as well as Championship Rugby Union, which of course they have the rights to, and they show far more games than Championship Rugby League, but you know, they also showed a game from the new the Women's Rugby Union Premiership, which was a precursor to the men's championship game. So I wonder if that's going to be something in the future. I know when the Women's Super League expansion was launched earlier this year, there was talk of TV coverage. So whether that's going to be something that comes in next year or not, I guess remains to be seen.
Again, are we taking money out of the same pot? We need the women's game to improve. We need the wheelchair game to improve. We need the academy game to improve. The issue, first and foremost, has got to be who is out there selling the sport to new sponsors.
There was the thing from Sky that should a championship club play at the same venue as a Premier, as a Super League club? Well, the women could do that, couldn't they?
I think the plan is to do that.
And maybe shot on a midweek night, show the game or whatever.
And I think they'll do that. I think they will. If a game is being played at Wigan prior, you know, Wigan are playing St Helens in the women's game prior to a men's match and the cameras are already there, then Sky will feature it. I think they've already made that commitment. Whether they will pay extra is the issue, because that's not part of any television deal.
No, but we are mourning we don't get enough coverage for the championship, etc. So I guess any bonus coverage is bonus, isn't it?
But there should be a fee attached to it.
Yeah, even if it's a nominal fee.
Absolutely.
Or, and as you said, you get someone to sponsor it.
And that fee should go straight back into the women's game rather than be allocated elsewhere.
Fair dues.
Dave's only just tuned in now. What has he missed? We sat Wayne Bennett.
Richard brought the computer.
That was good.
For the second time in a week, we nearly went off air. Richard brought the computer and, that's it, really.
We're all fairly positive-ish after...
I'm very positive. I think that we have over-exceeded our expectation to come so close to
I only say we've met it. We've met my expectation.
I think we all hoped that the minimum requirement was we would make the final.
Yeah. I am of the opinion, and I have been of this opinion every time in the Four Nations, is England just needed to produce one mammoth performance.
But don't you think
really
we did?
Mattered.
Don't you think we did? And that it was an ankle tap away from being greatness.
But it was a losing mammoth effort, so therefore it didn't 100% meet, because I wanted them to win.
Before the game, did you honestly think it would be 6-0 and go down to the last play?
I thought they could win. So
Sean O'Loughlin out.
Yeah, that was a worry. But as we've said before, England in the forwards, I don't think that's an issue.
No, I think he just gives you that greater degree of stability in the middle, and his option taking is normally really, really good.
Yeah, look, I'm not denying that, but I also think we don't settle for coming second. That's not enough.
I think what we've seen is a vast improvement.
Vast improvement, but not the finished article, Phil.
That comes in 2021.
Correct. When we win it, wherever the final is. Ronald on Young Players says, Super League have to start producing young players with skill and pace in the moulds of Murphy, Millwood and Topless, and not be afraid to play them. Example, look at the young England footballers who have been introduced by Gareth Southgate. I guess the first problem with Ronald's list there is they're all players who started their careers in, at the latest in the 1970s. But the point we made, you know, as we said earlier, you know, all right, so we don't play Luke Gayle anymore, but who wears number 7 for England? And Scully's not here to see Jordan Lilley and Jake Truman and whoever else, because that might be in the future. But at this moment in time...
I mean, you know, you make the point about Moon playing at 6. What if Brian McDermott thinks that Jordan Lilley isn't ready yet?
Well, then we look and see why is he not ready. And how
but maybe part of
game...
his education was going and leading a team round in the Championship in tough circumstances. Maybe now, this pre-season, when he comes back, having experienced that, he will be staking a claim. But
how old is he now, Lily?
Is he 21? Just 21?
Surely, if he's ready, he's ready, isn't he?
I don't know. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe. Why wouldn't a club play a youngster if they didn't think they could do the job?
We're not picking on Leeds, by the way.
I'm just saying that if Tony Smith at Warrington had thought that Declan Patton could do the job that he wanted him to do, he would have picked him.
And, of course, not every overhyped young player who's going to be the next big thing becomes the next big thing. David says, to me, there is something very simple to increase the academy's reserve teams, internationals, play welfare, whilst still having as many games as decided, and that is every player can play a maximum number of first-grade games in the season. Semi-finals and finals could be excluded.
I've thought about this before, and it's an interesting one. How you would place it, you know, if you, for instance, you're the Wigan coach and you've kept Sean O'Loughlin, you've rested him, or you've played him so many games, and then you have about 8 of your best players not playing. You think, well, he's fit, but I'm not allowed to. I don't know. I like the thought of it.
Yeah, I think the other issue with that is that we genuinely haven't got a competition where everybody is equal at the start of the season.
No.
Which is verified by the fact that only 4 teams have won the grand final. So I think you can only bring in something like that. Because otherwise...
The nearest I think we'll get to that, Phil, is central contracts. Yeah. And that is a whole new ball game.
And straight back to the amount of money that's coming in the game.
Yeah, that would be, you know, if we say, right, so-and-so is an England player, he's only allowed to play 4 in every 5 or whatever, and, that's the nearest we'll get to it.
And then the issue will then be, well, they were rested against teams that you would have rested them anyway because the division isn't equal in terms of quality and...
Yeah,
you have to get to a point where at least every team is spending the salary cap.
Mm. Andy, though...
Yes, the elephant in the room right over there. You can't see it, it's on camera. Super League setup doesn't encourage you gambling like playing your kids. The fear of relegation encourages that. That's why the Premier League has the same problem. And there's far much more money in the football Premier League than there is in Super League. And
I mean, I'm not a follower of football, but I barely recognise any of the names playing for the England team at the moment. Mm. And they're not playing at first team level in the top teams in what is supposedly the best division in the world.
Yeah.
That's an issue for all sports that does have promotion relegation. They don't play their youngsters. The cost of not getting it right is too high.
Still something we should sign Tim Tebow. Can you offer
you? Oops, I've missed the news. Does that matter?
Well, let's carry on.
The new regime.
We do what we want.
Never done that before. Normally have adverts to play. That's all gone now.
News is depressing.
I like Barry Weir, though. I like him. Shall we jet in for the last minute or so?
Nah. It makes the podcast easier to edit. Robert says, even Cameron Smith, who someone else referred to him as looking like a geography supply teacher, said it was one of the hardest games we played in. Great game, well done, England. Someone else did say... If it was so good and the players like it so much, why aren't we playing the Australians for another couple of years? Because you've got to get these calendars sorted out. That's you know, before the World Cup, everyone hated international rugby, but now everyone likes it again now. Mm. So, you know,
and there isn't really no reason why, if we are genuinely bringing back the Lions in 2019, that we don't know who they're playing now. Are they going to Papua New Guinea, the least that they deserve for the wonderful games that they hosted? Are they going to play a game in Tonga, which has never happened before? They now have a stadium that they can play at. The Aussies went and played a pre-tournament game there. Are they going to play any sides outside of the national team? So do we get to play Queensland? Do we get to play New South Wales? All of that, I think, it's not unfair to have that nailed on in the calendar now. And I think a lot of England fans would go and watch that.
Yeah, of course they would. But
and how are you going to get television rights? How are you going to get sponsorship? How are you going to get commercial partners?
But if you
don't
have a proper tour, Phil, you're not going to be able to have a proper season as we have one now. Otherwise, they'll be playing in January when Super League kicks off.
And we had this debate at the beginning of the 2017 season. We said, and I think the debate was structured around whether Wayne Bennett should have had his camp or not. And on that, I would say that had we got together a further time during the season, would that have made the difference on Saturday? It certainly wouldn't have done any harm. But one of the things we said right at the very beginning of the 2017 campaign was, why didn't we isolate this year, knowing it was a World Cup year and knowing how important it was for the sport, if England won the World Cup, to make some changes, to maybe not have the eights, to reduce the level of stress on our top players so that when they got out to Australia, they had the best possible chance of winning. We didn't do that. We actually gave them two Easters and we didn't have the camp that was initially the reason for, and we fell short by an ankle tap. You just wonder, had we had the bravery to shorten the season in 2017, would we have won the World Cup?
As long as you don't miss the news at 8, we're all right. Otherwise, Tom will kick us. Do we know what's going to happen and when we'll find out about the future of Wayne Bennett as England coach?
I don't think we're sure, are we?
I don't think he wanted to discuss it in the aftermath of the heartbreak of the game. I don't know when Nigel Wood is back in this country. It will be, I suspect, sometime this week. I would imagine that if preliminary discussions would have been had before he leaves. Would you be prepared to have somebody coaching your team in a World Cup at the age of 71?
Why not?
Is that a stumbling block or not an issue?
Not an issue.
Not to me. If he's up for the challenge, he's physically fit, why not?
What if he says, I'll take it on, but I insist on having a camp at the beginning of every season between now and 2021? Would you allow him that latitude? Would you debate with the club owners that they need to release their players? Would you again say, well, that means that the top players that played in the World Cup or are in the England scheme don't play the first two rounds of Super League? Are club owners prepared to sacrifice league points now for winning the World Cup in 4 years' time? It's all a debate we should be having. I just don't think we have any answers at the moment.
No, it's a fair point. It is a fair point. We shall see. Lots more. Go on.
Yes. We said we were going to talk about stuff after seven. Howard says, Nigel Wood needs to get more sponsors. Jane says, we need more people to come to games and participate to bring in extra money. Then that will bring in better sponsorship. Andy says, the sport needs a huge cash injection. Can that Qatari businessman interested in the NRL slip us a few quid? Where is the money coming from?
Well, this is the...
Has the championship got a sponsor yet? This is my new question that I ask every week.
And I think the one they had in mind has is not going to come forward now.
Right. Okay.
We'll put a bid in.
What type of business was it, Phil, if we can ask?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But I don't think they got them quite over the line, which isn't to say there isn't somebody else interested, but the original partner they were looking for, I don't think, has managed to come to a deal. What we have got out of this World Cup is some collateral to sell to a potential sponsor. I mean, I thought the reaction to that World Cup final, not least from high-profile sportsmen in other sports, really gave us something that you know, if you were to go to a major multinational corporation and say, this is what everyone was talking about on Saturday morning, the heroism of this team of lads, would you not, for what would nominally be a small investment in sporting terms, want to be part of this? This is coming to us again at the end of next season, and then the World Cup is coming here in 2021. This is the perfect time to be cultivating major commercial partners, which is not to say the RFL aren't doing that, but we haven't heard that perhaps they are.
And also the players that are getting their extra 20 grand or whatever is are perfect people to be shaking hands with these potential business partners, because they are part of a World Cup squad as seen on national television for 6 weeks, and they're 20 grand by pressing the flesh.
We've got more friends in places outside of where we think we have than we know. I think there's quite a lot of people in the City of London that are very well aware of Rugby League I'm just not sure that we have had the expertise to tap into some of that to turn that into cash.
Before I forget, why has no rugby league club got the easiest publicity of the week by sending Prince Harry and Meghan Markle shirts with their names on the back? Why has no rugby league club done that and made a big thing of it?
Fair enough.
He's the patron of our sport.
He is.
And he didn't go. He was busy. But, you know.
Fair dues.
Free publicity.
John says, if I pay my money, I want to see the clubs play their strongest team, not be resting their players for England.
But then that's about whether having a strong and winning England is better for the sport. And it encourages clubs to have...
A question for John, then.
...deeper squads.
Would you be happy with just a... What is it, 12-team Super League now? 14, is it?
It's going up to four.
It's going up to 14,
but it's currently 12.
So 26 games, 13 home games, maybe one in the playoffs. Would you be happy with that, John, or do you insist we have this 30-game season because you want to watch your team more?
We need more international football to make it more important so people buy into it more. Yeah. Although, in fairness, football's got the same issue at the moment, hasn't it, where club football is far more important than international football. When international breaks come around, everyone goes a bit meh. And you lose... Well, the England national team being a disgrace for the last few tournaments has helped as well. People want to see their club be successful more than their country, and I don't think we can necessarily turn that around completely, but at least the World Cup...
I think in reply to John as well, what Rugby Union do at the moment is when the Six Nations is on, their club matches still continue, but the clubs play without their top players. It's acknowledged that it's the Six Nations money coming in at full stadia that pays for the clubs. So there is a payback. You produce a great player, he goes on and plays for the country. The country then feeds money back into your club, which enables your club to feed more junior players. And we're talking about what opportunities should junior players have. Well, when the senior guys are on international duty, you've got a chance to play some of your junior players and see how good they are. So I think that balance does work. Cricket, probably it goes too far the other way, that you can be a member of a county cricket club and never see your best players play because they're centrally contracted, and there's so much test cricket now that balance has gone too far the other way. But the Six Nations model for rugby union seems to work. You can have both. We need that international dimension. That is what will feed new interest in the sport. I think there was a piece from Steve Mascord, who has his hand on all of development internationally, about at the World Cup final, you had new investors that we've never had before, some allied to franchises that want to come in the Americas, but also businessmen who were there because they were guests of the likes of David Argyle, who's the owner of Toronto. And it's that new money meeting the old money.
Well, there's that infusion
is going to keep the sport at the level we all want it to be at and enhance it.
Is that guy from the Western... Is it the Western Red? Remember we got kicked out of the Super...
Super whatever.
He's like a billionaire. Why don't we get him tapped up? Well, he could get us a team.
If there is a Qatari... And the story was run in Australia, so we've, again, you know, we take it at this point at face value. There is a Qatari investor that's prepared to put, was it $50 million into an NRL club? He knows nothing about rugby league. He just likes what he's seeing. He likes the idea of bringing that sport to his people at home by investing in a team in the NRL. Those are the people we need to look at.
The Australian press did say that Dr. Kukash was buying about every other NRL franchise though as well.
I think that's Dr. Kukash said he was buying every other NRL.
Move on.
The good doctor. Well, the good news is because International Rugby League, of course, is back on national television next autumn with the series against New Zealand, which are all being played in the north, so that's, you know, 1-0 to us. Well done us for that. And they're going to be on national television, which everyone's very excited about, despite the fact, well, they were last year and the year before that.
Yeah. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. We give stuff to the BBC, not saying the coverage isn't good, but what does it bring to our game?
I think
nothing.
It brings us a level of audience that we can't get anywhere else.
We've had that audience up to two million. 20 years, so,
but
Phil.
But have we actually acted on the back of that?
So we've acted on it now, are we?
Well, we need to get a sponsor on the back of it. We need to sell that square on the front of the England shirt for mega bucks because we can give 2 million people's eyes on that product.
Right, okay.
And the name of the series.
Here's a thought then. Why don't we sell it to a TV company that does advertising and then they can sell it?
You are assuming that there is a TV company out there that wants it.
I was told, and would pay a huge amount of money. Our friends at the RFL listen, so that if I'm wrong, I'm sure I'll get a text saying you're out of order for saying that. But I was told the last time there was any rights up for bidding that we hadn't spoken to the commercial stations in this country. What does that say?
I would level that accusation at the people we employ to look after our media rights.
Well, these are the same people.
I think perhaps that they're coming back in house.
These are the same people that work with the you know, the commercial department that you're expecting to get your loads of advertising on your shirt.
I cannot understand why, if you have got 2 million people watching a World Cup final, and the response afterwards that was generally overwhelmingly positive. That sell that for
90% of those people watch a game now until it's on the BBC again next year.
And by that time, do we not want a sponsor that's paid £1 million, £1.5 million to have their name on that shirt? Because they know that the product is so good and that the general sporting public will be watching it.
To be fair to say that the current Super League sponsor do a lot of good stuff on social media.
Probably the best one we've had, if you're going to be honest.
I did a little bit of research last week.
What was this for?
Got more time on my hands these days. I got bored. And I was looking at the various profiles of highlight programmes on television. And as we know, the Super League show, which is what it is, I don't tend to watch it because by 8 o'clock on a Sunday, I can see all the tries on Sky with Tony Ray stood at the big screen, so I don't really need to watch them again at Monday at 11 o'clock at night. 11 o'clock at night only in the north, because as we know, the BBC think only people in the north watch rugby league.
Well, can I jump back in before you continue with your point? Is that is one of my points. If we are going to work with the BBC, and it's not, it's not a criticism of the coverage, we know and respect the people involved, but the tail is wagging the dog. They get our best product for free, or for next to free. They don't pay a lot for it, and don't anyone at the RFL know they pay for it? No, they don't. We all know they don't. Right, that's a fact. Yeah, commercially sensitive means people are embarrassed at how much they've got for it. That's what that means. So they get our best product, and in return, they get a great audience, which suits what they ticks a few boxes for them. Minority sport covered, yeah, tick, tick, tick. And then they put on our other best show, if you like, that people will watch on a weekly basis on at after 11 o'clock at night.
Or then 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
So a lot of these people that are watching the rugby league down in London, boom, isn't it? This rugby league's gone, isn't it? They don't get to watch the highlight show. So do we say, you're right, okay, BBC, yeah, you can have it. We'll give you it again for a pittance. Thank you for your support. But the Super League show's going on at half eight. Even if it's on BBC Two on a Monday night or a Sunday night, we want it on then. And if they say no, I'll say, right, I'll tell you what, thanks a lot for all your support. We're going to go somewhere else now.
Might it be that we are geographically specific, which allows us to be characterised as a regional sport?
You're just saying England, great, 1.5 million
England
people.
England is different to the Super League. England is a much, much different product.
There are no.
I'm not having that.
It is.
I'm not having that.
It is. England is a totally different product to the Super League.
Right. Okay.
The highlights of Super League, 11:30 at night in the north only on a Monday night. Tuesday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, unless you know there's snooker on or something. Rugby Union's highlights.
Rugby Union pay for their highlights. We don't.
They're on Why? Channel 5
because we haven't got any money.
Because they run the game properly. Yeah, Channel so maybe 5. We need a bit of a favour, Phil, off our friends at the BBC.
I think you'll find that the Super League show comes out of regional production.
And that's the part
and
of the problem as well.
It's hard to argue that.
It shouldn't do. It should be part of BBC Sport. Because BBC Sport, twice a week on national television, broadcast programmes about the NFL, none of which teams are based in this bloody country.
Do the NFL play for that?
Well, they shouldn't be, should they? BBC shouldn't be taking money from other firms to show
I think you'll
programs.
Find that it's a bought-in product. It doesn't cost them anything.
Right.
And the governing bodies of these other sports have generated sufficient income. The Rugby Union highlights will have very few people watching them, but the Rugby Union, along with their principal partner,
Aviva. How do you know that?
The Rugby Union pay for the.
I'm not arguing with that. How do you know no one watches it?
The viewing figures aren't great.
I just think you're apologising for them.
I think we need to be better. The number of people that view the sport compared to, for example, who will tune in and watch a live Sky game, the BBC is valuable.
Yeah.
But it's not valuable.
I get that.
It's not valuable in terms of what they pay. It's valuable in terms of what they offer us to allow us to go and get commercial income alongside that. And that's the bit that falls down.
That is nonsense. That is nonsense.
It's true.
Why is it?
Because we are a regional big minority sport. And we haven't got the resource to put our own highlights package together, as indeed hockey don't have, which is a nationwide sport but can't get the coverage, as Speedway have found.
Women's Super League. Well, that, yeah, that gets more TV coverage than we get.
This is the point. This is the point from football.
I don't know who pays for that.
As Gareth has said, regarding media coverage for Rugby League, how does women's football seem to get such great TV and news coverage despite smaller club crowds and lower profile? Not all about fan numbers, perhaps. And Gareth, you've hit the nail on the head, and it's the unspeakable truth. There is a definitive reason, and we're taking nothing away from the athletes or the sport as to why the Women's Super League, with crowds smaller than British ice hockey's top flight, is on the BBC, and the ice hockey isn't, and the football's on, and the rugby league's on at 11:30 in the north, only if your aerial's pointing to Emily Moore.
And what is that unspeakable truth?
Because they're trying to promote women's sport for whatever reason. But not.
Will they do the same for rugby league?
For the right reasons, are they?
I think Sky will, and I think that if they're
Hold on. Why are we assuming Sky will? Right. Sky are not women's rugby league media partners, are they?
Here's another issue that the question needs to be levelled at. Perhaps the RFL could answer it for us if they're listening to.
They will be listening. I'll get an email, strongly worded one. I recommend
the BBC. Wanted to show highlights of the Women's World Cup alongside the men's. They were told it was too expensive.
Who by?
Well, this is where if the people of the RFL are ringing in, was it the RFL asking for the money? Was it Channel 7 asking for the money? There was space allocated on national television when our World Cup games were on for the men to feature the women. But the BBC were asked to pay an amount of money that made it prohibitive.
Right. Now, is this because they're tight and they won't spend the money, or is it because it's a ridiculous figure?
That's why, hopefully, if somebody from the RFL is listening, But there was space allocated to show the Women's World Cup highlights, but agreement could not be reached because of the amount of money that was asked for. Well, if you were a governing body and you were seriously thinking about promoting the Women's Super League next year, why would you want anything for those rights?
Well, we don't know it was them that was been charging, do we?
I suspect it might have been.
But this is the BBC that won't pay above a very minimal fee to cover the England game.
Why should there be a fee to show highlights of the Women's World Cup that's being televised by Channel 7?
This is a... Right, Phil, just to put this into context, right, Gary Lineker, £1.8 million for working one day a week on the BBC... Don't let the BBC kid you. They ain't got any money.
I'm not saying that they didn't have any money. They wanted to show those highlights.
No, they wanted it for free. And they get everything else for free.
I don't know if they wanted it for free. You don't know that they wanted it for free.
Because our product to them has got no value.
You don't know that they wanted it for free.
If you go on ITV, for instance, should they want it? And they go, oh, 1.5 million
people
watching.
But they don't want it.
Honestly, how do you know?
They don't want
it. How do you know?
The women's rugby, because they haven't bid for it.
Right, have they been asked to bid for it? Because it's a close show. Oh, yeah, maybe
they know where every television company knows when the rights are up for every sport.
Are the rights up on the BBC? They get it all the time.
I think...
How much have they paid? Commercially sensitive. Rubbish. Well, rubbish. Broadcast it. We've got £1 million. Our biggest ever TV deal. We've got it. From the BBC. Thanks, BBC. We love you. Here's all the Super League. Use it when you want. They don't do anything.
We could have put the Women's World Cup highlights out to 1.5 million people and it didn't happen. Somebody needs to tell us why.
Now, I agree with you on that one. Right?
Yeah.
Don't assume the BBC... Oh, they wouldn't pay. They wouldn't pay, Phil.
You don't know that.
I do know that. They won't pay for an England game.
You don't know what they were asked to pay.
Well, they weren't asked to pay very lot for the England game and they still won't pay, would they?
You would have thought, with a Women's Super League starting at the beginning of next season, that we would have been doing everything we could to promote women's sport. Now, if there's been a breakdown over price, which I'm led to believe there has... We need to know where that blockage is in the system.
I've just had a text off my dad telling me to calm down.
I hope they don't pay rugby union teams for championship rugby commentary anyway. There's no value to that.
I think we need to be more open about it.
Yes,
this commercially
well,
sensitive.
The whole sport needs to be more
open. We don't
open.
Monetize anything. We don't come out and say, you know, Betfred, biggest sponsorship deal.
Well, have we told...
Or six-figure sponsorship deal,
has anybody been told how many people watched the England-Samoa game behind a paywall? No, it was commercially sensitive.
Yeah.
We need more transparency in everything that we do.
Yeah. Well, if you come out and, you know, you maybe need to... if you get... you get a kicking for it, you learn from it, you move on.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm all for kicking the RFL when I can. They know that. They listen to this show for that reason.
Well,
but at the same time, when we can help them, we will help them.
But it would be nice to know why the Women's World Cup wasn't televised in highlight form. Because Richard quite rightly makes the point there is a lot being made about women's football at the moment. There was an avenue to show it to a big audience alongside the men's version, and the women's final was fantastic. If people haven't seen the highlights of that, log on and see it. It was a terrific game. Mm. Who is at fault? Somebody tell us. Be open and honest.
This is what we're here to do.
I think this is our frustration, isn't it? And obviously we are part of the exciting and ever-shrinking world of the rugby league media, in a sense, or the traditional...
Might be getting smaller tomorrow.
The traditional sense of the rugby league media. Obviously, everyone's got a blog, everyone's got Twitter these days or whatever. The frustration is we all want to do the best possible coverage of the sport. We all want to make this sport bigger because it's better for everyone if the sport's bigger, because then we're all making money and we're all more famous and we're all this and that and we're all on Question the Sport or whatever. And we don't necessarily get that opportunity to do so because some of our broad... And like, you know, it's not as if we're saying Sky's coverage is perfect. You know, watch the NFL, they've got two people covering an NFL game, two commentators in the box. And on Sky, we've got 700 people sat there giving their opinion, some of which are useful, some of which are not. He says, biting his tongue. But it's the frustration that it's always... We always go back to them. Oh, he, you know, yeah. We've got to be great. That statement from the BBC, and here's the arrogance of the statement from the director of sport, the BBC, their unrivaled coverage. And you know and I know what exactly word to describe that statement is, because their coverage is not unrivaled. It never has been, and it never will be.
Yeah. See, Rich is getting angry now. I wonder if my dad's going to text me about that.
I still can't say the word I want to say to describe what that
no,
statement is.
But why is... The Premier League on Sky and BT, they get the smallest audience. Why? Because they pay
absolutely
the money. And sometimes, Phil, we're a sport, we've got to take the money.
But we also have to be well aware that we don't have broadcasters falling over themselves to compete with Sky to take our product. BT has shown not the slightest interest in rugby league. They've never come in with a competitive bid.
Well, hold on. They've only just formed, really. They only last couple of years, real emergence.
They were around when the last 8-year deal was done with Sky.
You mean the last 8-year deal that was done? Basically, lads, we need an answer by tomorrow. Yeah. But if you say yes, I've got some cash for you.
Absolutely.
Don't worry about that, boys.
Again.
Yeah, so they had one. What are they supposed to do? Actually, no, what I'd like to do is I'd like to explore all the other avenues, which is, I think, if I'm... forgive me if I'm quoting people out of turn. Pretty sure Ian Lenigan came out and said, if we'd have had a bit more time...
I think it was Dr. Kukash.
I think... Well, all right. I thought Mr. Lenigan came out as well and said, maybe we should have done something more with that. So there is... A feeling within the game
and
that the clubs...
I think you'll find that that's why the administration of Super League has changed.
Yeah. So all these people tweeting in about Nigel, well, you might not be doing that soon.
I think what has definitely happened is that Super League have had a meeting to reconstitute their board. Their board now only contains the 12 clubs. There is no... represented. The chairman of that group is not now the chairman of the RFL, and one of the people that sat at that table, who was the chief executive of the Rugby League, is not at that table anymore. So in terms of their own governance, Super League are taking back some determination. Now, whether that's a good or a bad thing, we'll wait to see. There may be other ramifications on the back of that as well. But that's one of the reasons why they've changed it, because they want to have more time to look at their product and how it's presented. The danger of that might be that they're only interested in themselves and the rest of the product with us on the vine. So we need to be very careful about our League One and the Championship going to be completely cut adrift Because the only thing that television companies want to televise, because it's commercially viable for them to do so, is the Super League. Whether we like that or not, that is the truth.
I don't see.
So if the Super League clubs take
football,
but if the Super League clubs take all the money in the future and say we are not divvying it up to Championship or League One clubs, how will they survive?
They're not going to take it all. They may well take a large part. That's what happens in football. That's what happens in sport.
But there are different rules and regulations in football. There is that trickle down effect. What might happen with the Super League now taking over its own governance is there won't be that trickle-down effect, because football has billions and billions of pounds. So to give 5% to the lowest grassroots level is not a lot for these multi-billion companies at the top of the Premier League. We're not talking about that. And that's the issue. The whole thing comes back to the amount of money that comes into the sport.
Yeah, which means if you give away your best product for free, you're not getting enough money, are you?
You're not giving it away for free.
It
gives you the opportunity to sell commercial income on the back of that audience.
Oh, Phil, do me a favour.
That's how it works.
All right, all right.
That's how it works.
I like it. When was the last time, right, the RFL, and I am questioning them now, signed a big, big money commercial deal? This is not just something that's happened in the last 6 weeks. This has been ongoing for decades.
But their chance to do it is with the national team. And the one legacy of this World Cup is the profile of our national team over the last 20 years has not been higher on the back of that last 80 minutes. What are we doing to capitalise on that?
You watch a lot of sport, don't you? You watch a lot of sport. When you see the adverts on the sport, right, what are a lot of the adverts for?
Yeah.
Now, what are they for?
But you've got...
Now, what are they for? Betting companies. Betting companies, by and large. We work in the betting industry, Rich and I. There's a lot of money in the betting industry.
Right. Well, right? We've got a Super League
sponsor.
But on
the BBC, you can't advertise a betting company. You might have your logo in the top corner.
What if
as
it was
doing the
but
cup
what
file.
If it's on the front of your shirt? The BBC can't stop a team being sponsored by a betting company. Virtually every Match of the Day highlights programme is shirts with people with betting companies on. Those companies play an absolute fortune. The exposure that they get on the BBC with the amount of eyes that are on it makes their commercial decision worthwhile. It's about our ability to sell the national team to a major audience. We have now got a platform to do that, and it could well be that the RFL commercial department is out today taking around its portfolio saying, come the next major Great Britain tour or whatever the product is that we haven't already given away to a potential sponsor, you could have your name there. Why didn't we get a headline sponsor for this World Cup?
They will say some nonsense again.
It's partners.
Exactly. Because the FIFA World Cup doesn't have a sponsor. Yeah, but the FIFA World Cup's the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah.
And the Rugby League World Cup isn't.
The Women's World Cup in Rugby League that had only six nations had a headline sponsor.
Did it?
Harvey Norman.
I didn't know that. It shows how much attention I was paying. As Patrick mentions, and perhaps, you know, we've kicked the RFL, but we should give the clubs a kicking, because when they had the opportunity to make some money with a sponsor, they decided to have a moral compass. A moral compass.
Well, did they decide that, or did Richard Thewlis decide
they
that?
They decided they have a moral compass and we're not going to get involved with betting companies when they signed the deal with Stobart, and yet they've all now got their own bloody betting sites.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's amazing. Oh no, can't have this. Oh yeah, we can do. Yeah. And we've got beer on our shirts, and you know, if we could still have SIGs on, we'd still be sponsored by SIGs, wouldn't we? The reason all these companies sponsor is because it's their best way to get their name and product on television. Because of restrictions elsewhere, and that's fine. Because Formula One does it, and football does it, and they're far bigger than us.
I think the issue about Super League is that we are seen to be a perfect vehicle for a certain type of sponsor. So Bachelor's Peas works. Iron Brew works. But the England team is something different. And we have gone from having Gillette on the front, which is a major multinational brand, to having the fifth biggest cider manufacturer in Britain. That is the issue.
Fair dues.
And no, Rick, you missed the bit where we discussed the Championship hasn't got a sponsor yet. We're putting together a package. I've got about a fiver in my wallet. The RSW Championship coming
soon. I've got 10 pence left.
You lent me 50p earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah. Stu's mentioned Barry Hearn again, and it's all well and good mentioning Barry Hearn, but in darts and snooker, you're dealing with individuals, and it's easier to remember individuals that people can buy into or not than it is as teams.
I'd be tempted to give Barry Hearn an event. I think that would be his entry level into a sport. If you said to him, there's a weekend, and here's our sport, tell us what you're putting on, whether it's nines or whether it's, you know.
He did this with netball and basketball a few weeks ago.
Did it with table tennis as well?
I have no idea
he?
If any, you know, if people decided to pitch up and watch basketball. I can
just imagine it now. He comes to the Super League meeting and he goes, right, lads, we're all off to China next week. I've got us a tournament there. Don't worry about that. Yep. What do you mean Wakefield are playing Catalan at Bellevue? No. We're off to Shanghai, lads. We're off to Shanghai. Yeah, it's a different, like Rich said, it's a different sport. It's a different.
We need some of his hype. We need some of his selling.
But if you were to sell him the rights to Magic Weekend, I think we'd see something a little bit different that would generate income and interest. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't we do that?
Maybe we should give him the World Club Challenge.
World Club Challenge,
maybe
he
could do something.
Maybe
like that.
An England Test Series.
Hmm. Maybe. And say, right, Barry, we want 3 million. Whatever you earn above that, you can keep.
Absolutely.
And I reckon he'd make 10 million.
Yeah.
That's how he works.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Summer Bash. Well, that might be beyond
beyond redemption.
Good evening to Edwin, who's listening in America. Yeah. The powers of the internet.
Is Wisconsin anywhere near Denver? I don't know. Are you going, Edwin?
Is Wisconsin Green Bay country?
Green
isn't
Bay,
it?
Yeah. The Badgers, isn't it?
Is he a cheesehead? Is he a cheesehead?
Wisconsin Badgers, I think he's there.
Look at that for a non-NFL watcher, Phil. You know your NFL.
I think he's on the BBC
Is he an exile or is he a native?
He's just listening to three blokes from Yorkshire. Honestly, I know we're not on DAB anymore, but if he'd done well to pick it up in Wisconsin.
I accidentally watched a bit of the NFL programme the other night before the BBC showed a dreadful film. And
you will probably watch that, though, as well, Rich, in fact.
I would have seen it at the cinema. But it was... I don't want to criticise products involved in our sport, because it sounds like I'm criticising it for the sake of criticising it. But you can tell that the NFL programme had a bigger budget and had more about it. And the Super League show is what it is. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but it's only going to attract people.
How many people go and watch the NFL games at Wembley? Does it sell out every time?
Yeah. Four times this year. Four times. You only have eight home games. If you've got a team in the NFL.
The interest in that product is greater than the interest in rugby league. But the international dimension of rugby league is a product that we haven't cashed in on yet.
When Jacksonville moved to London, I look forward to the NFL show being only broadcast in London.
Yes,
by BBC English regions.
Yeah,
it's just, I've said this point on the programme before. The fact that the Super League show does not come out of the BBC sport budget and comes out of English regions is a disgrace, and you know that's something where. But their coverage is unrivaled because they told me that.
Yeah,
I just find that completely arrogant. What if we came on the air and say, oh, we're the best, don't bother listening to anyone else, they're all crap, just listen to us instead.
No,
you just did.
I better do a new jingle for next week's show. Yeah. Never mind.
I think people have enjoyed us being...
We need to.
Rugby's finished now.
Yeah, well, you know.
Let's wait till Scully's back next week.
It's finished for 3 weeks and one day, and then it'll be
It's part of the issue.
I enjoyed the email saying we can get tickets for Bradford's pre-season friendlies.
Yes, we can.
Oh, but I should say, and because regardless of media coverage and stuff, I'm not a Lee Centurions fan, but they bombard me with emails because, bizarrely, I'm part of the Rugby League media. Other clubs don't do that. Lee are sending out stories all the time. They won't always get published, but they're always sending stuff out. And the more you send out, the more chance someone will pick up on something. So well done, Lee. Gareth's talking about international rugby. Part of the difficulty of making European International Rugby League interesting is the proliferation of faux Welsh, Irish and Scottish. How many have an accent? All feels a bit like England versus not good enough for England. The French accepted, of course.
I'd like to see you say that to the Irish pack that played in the World Cup.
The Welsh football team, like I say, half of them are not Welsh. The Scottish Rugby Union team, half of them are not Scottish. The England cricket team.
We're thinking about disowning them anyway.
It's about England keeping cricket. This group together. We spoke about Ireland maybe a couple of weeks ago when they went out of the tournament. But in 2000, we had the basis of taking rugby league to Ireland. They'd played in the quarter final of the World Cup with almost exclusively heritage players because there was very little rugby being played in Ireland. A fantastic game against England at Headingley. They only just lost. They were credible for over an hour. You look at some of the names that played in that Irish team at that time. We had the opportunity to do something. And 17 years later, we are saying exactly the same thing, that the players who played for Ireland really were... Don't let anybody tell Liam Finn that he isn't Irish. The leading captain point scorer for that nation, he sacrificed absolutely everything to play for a country that he wasn't born at, but that his parents and grandparents that were. He's probably cost him money to play. So don't say that he isn't committed to that cause. But what are we doing to make that elevated? And if we are going to play Ireland against England in Dublin in the autumn as part of a European Championship, please can we announce it now? Please can we go out and harness a broadcast partner? Please can we get some sponsors for it? Please can we give it a proper name and not the Six Nations? And we can't do that the week before it happens.
Especially when English and, British and Irish relations are big news at the moment. Jim says,
Would you go and pay to watch England play that Ireland team that played in the World Cup?
Yeah, but I'm a fan. I would go watch.
I think it's promotable. And if that game was in Dublin, would you go?
No, I don't know.
It's expensive,
Dublin. You know, I can't go jet setting around the world to watch my team.
Yeah,
it's so easy to get to. Well, if you're paying,
no,
I'll
but
go.
It,
no,
but
there
it is
you go.
Cheap.
If you're paying, me and Rich will come.
Right, I'll take you.
Right, it's on. Then I'll ring you tomorrow.
The only thing that isn't on is the game.
Yeah, we'll go anyway. We'll go anyway. Eh? Tell the missus it's on, we're off.
Weekend in Dublin, RLMI.
That's big Jim Mills, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, I think it is. He follows us on Twitter. So, yeah, it is, isn't it? That's big Jim, yeah. Big Jim. I hope he's listening tonight. I hope you're well, Jim.
Well, he sent us a message, although I've lost it now.
Yeah, about rugby union going professional.
When rugby union went professional, it spelled the demise of rugby league. Like it or not, rugby league is a regional game, family game as well. That's why the BBC treats it that way. Sky need to fill all their many channels of sport, and rugby league is cheap coverage for them. With soccer, rugby union, and the many sports coverage, rugby league is one of the minor sports as the TV companies see it. It is.
And that is 100% correct. And in the past, and not that we're going to argue with Jim anyway, but in the past... TWI, who have held the rights for rugby league, selling it around the world, have used it as a filler. So what they've got in their portfolio are sports like Formula One. And when they sell them to India, they go, would you like Formula One? And India go, yes, please. And we go, well, at 3 o'clock in the morning, would you like a bit of Super League to go with that? That is how we're viewed. But that is club competition. What we have seen over the last 6 weeks is the ability to create, promote and sell, again, as if it was something new, international competition.
Basically, as someone pointed out earlier, some of the other stuff Sky show, we are to India what pro kabaddi is to Sky Sports. We're the filler, although we like the kabaddi.
Yeah, we do like kabaddi.
Yeah.
We're looking at rights.
Well, the Fortune Giants.
Yeah. We have had a response from the RFL. and I'm not just making this up. I have had a response from the RFL.
Are they listening?
Well, obviously they are. Yeah, you're getting some stick.
They've turned off
again.
Yeah, I won't bother going to Melbourne. They'll let you in. He says, my colleague at the RFL, a spokesman said, regarding the highlights, Rugby League World Cup asked for a fee, not the RFL. They asked the BBC for a small fee for the highlights, is the word used. That's an interesting term.
Well,
small fee.
It would be nice to know what that was.
Right, well, they asked, and the RFL tried hard to make it happen. So, I'll go back to my previous point. The BBC wouldn't pay.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, Brian Barwick is the chairman of Super League, so you're incorrect.
No, I said he was.
Oh, did you? I apologise.
Yeah.
Well, my listener is dubbed me in there, hasn't he?
I said the chairman and the CEO were not going to be on the new board of Super League. And it's reconstituted.
It is, but it won't be.
Oh, well, there you go. So, there you go. So, the BBC won't pay. So they
can anybody give us the amount that they wouldn't pay?
Yeah,
because that's the key, isn't it? That is the key.
Probably about less than a minute of Gary Lineker.
Yeah, in terms of Gary Lineker's, how many weeks? What 1.8 million? What's that? 300-odd grand a week? You're right. I'd say about half an hour.
Do you think of the Sports Personality of the Year when it's coming up? He stands out the front. Do you think Claire Balding and Gabby Logan are thinking, why is he getting paid that much for the same job?
Should have one of them totalizers on, like Children in Need. It's just going round how much he's earning.
Lineker not in need.
Well, and then he comes out, he's this big big, you know, diplomat on Twitter, and he's off to Russia, and he's, no problem.
So
the Women's World Cup could have been shown. Yeah. What it would be advantageous to know, to apportion blame, is what that amount was. Can anybody tell us?
Small fee says not a lot of money. And if they won't pay it, then the BBC should be named and shamed.
But bear in mind, they
have been on this show.
They didn't send any radio broadcasters out to the World Cup, so they saved a lot of money in that sense anyway.
Well, yeah, we can't knock that.
But I'm just saying that's a cost they saved, isn't it?
Yeah. Jones says, what have I missed?
Not a lot.
Nothing. Nothing done.
I said
Sam Tompkins should have got to the World Cup.
Download the podcast, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be there.
Yeah, make sure you do that.
Yeah, we need... We need more than ever you to download the podcast.
Stu says, do you think the England Rugby League team might get in the running for Team of the Year in the Sports Personality of the Year Award? No, because England Women's Cricket team...
Well, as we made the reference, as Rich made a point yesterday, had Jermaine McGilvery scored a hat-trick and won the World Cup for England single-handedly, because that's how good he is, he wouldn't even be on those...
Can anybody tell me why Cameron Smith is not on the Overseas Sports Personality of the Year?
The programme and the awards are nonsense and have
Tom Brady's on, mate, NFL, you see...
Deflategate, he's a proven cheat.
You get what?
Proven cheat.
I don't know who he is.
He's a cheat.
But why?
And he's on the list.
Why is Cameron Smith not on that list?
Well, why was Sam Burgess?
Because even before,
your mates at the
BBC,
Phil.
Sam Burgess broke his cheekbone, won a grand final, wasn't on the list 3-4 years ago, whenever it was. But they're still happy to. And here's the thing from last week's coverage of the World Cup, and I've remembered it now. You remember before the World Cup, a certain member of staff at the BBC called out Gary Carter for his pullout, 8-page pullout in The Sun. And whatever you think about The Sun, put that to one side. That was in a national newspaper, 8 pages. Brilliant coverage. Front page of it talks about Sam Burgess and his World Cup woes. And what did they lead with as a headline last week going into the World Cup final? Sam Burgess in a World Cup. Ooh, hypocrites.
Have you finished?
Yeah.
I forgot then. Who are you having a go at?
Very good.
Them.
We've had a tough week. Just give us a minute.
I'd lost who it was. He was actually ranting.
I can't wait till Scully's
next
week.
To be honest.
I think there's going to be. There will be self-combustion.
He is now number four, isn't he?
He's off the team. You know, we talk about resting your players. Well, we need to have a meeting after the show.
Have we coped without him?
Well, Ollie Holmes came in last week. You know, said about giving youngsters a chance. Well, what can I say?
Gareth, the answer to your question, I think, is yes. Stay tuned for more details.
What's that?
About the future of this and other stuff.
Yes,
stay tuned.
We're all good. We're all good. Keep the faith. Keep downloading the podcast. That's all we ask.
Just keep following us on Twitter @RL_on_RY. We haven't talked about the referees, which everyone got very upset about.
Which is good, because we've only got 16 minutes left.
Because I don't think they were an issue in the final.
There aren't any other referees, are there? We haven't got enough halfbacks, and we haven't got enough referees from foreign
countries. Surely a guy from New Zealand could have done it.
But he doesn't referee regularly in the NRL.
Why not?
He's just a name from... I don't know, maybe he's not good enough. But the fact is, we only have two professional competitions. The nearest we got over here was Thierry Alibert, and every time he refereed, everybody said, don't let him referee.
He has some great signals. He just never showed them to us.
Screen, please.
He just seems a nice guy.
Yes, he was
a nice guy. What I didn't like about the refereeing at the World Cup in the final and the semi-final is that you're putting people absolutely impossible position. And I don't think we should do that to anyone.
And I'm not sure why we aren't promoting more French referees in Super League games and more New Zealand referees in NRL games. Yeah. They must be out there, surely.
I don't see why we don't pool resources. And you know...
And I think the referee in the final wasn't an issue. I didn't hear a player, I didn't hear a coach, I didn't even hear a spectator saying he has determined the outcome in some way.
No.
And Ben Thaler, to his credit, quite rightly overruled a try decision. I don't think anybody said, oh, that's because you're English. I think it just was the right decision. So we got away with it.
All referees, I fully believe, touch judges, in-goal officials, whatever, go out there with the intention of making the right decision as they see it, all the time. But with no hint of bias or whatever.
No, they get it wrong.
It's worse in our competition in Super League, where we have referees from the same town. I mean, that's just nonsense when they're enough to move them around. Because you, then you're creating an issue for yourself that you don't need to create.
I always thought the best one is that Steve Ganson was famously a member of the St Helens Rugby League fan club. And he refereed in their games. How does that work?
I mean, don't say when Ben Taylor comes down to wait for you, we'll go, well, lads, here we go. It's all good today. Yes.
Russell Smith used to referee Bradford games, yeah, having played in their academy.
Yeah.
But... No, we do need to widen the pool of refereeing resource and have more nations available to take games. But in this particular 80 minutes of the World Cup final, not an issue.
But there aren't enough referees, there aren't enough halfbacks. Just about enough people sat in the studio. Need more people. Well, as Dawn does say, and this was the, I think this was the point where everyone turned on the ref, when Widdop was hit high and didn't get penalised, and then Cronk got hit, and then there was a penalty. I think I may have referred to that on Twitter as well. Yes. Three head-high shots. Guess which one's penalised. But that's, but you know, it is what it is. You know, it's the referee.
Did that determine the outcome of the game?
No.
You'll never know. Sliding doors, Phil. Anything could have happened. Anything could have happened at that moment.
Someone's written.
You
a
know,
book.
Whether it got penalised, might have had a blowout at the ref and got sent off.
Elliot Whitehead, should he have gone off for a HIA?
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't like to have been his head after. He must have hurt.
Wow.
More that must have it. Anyway, you know, any neutral watch, you know, we're going about our friends at the BBC. People watching that must go, what the hell are these people doing?
Yeah.
Mustn't they?
Yeah.
And it's, I used the word brutal in my assessment. It was a brutal game.
It was.
Wasn't it?
No holds barred.
Yeah.
I did enjoy all the the sports people that have been picked out on Twitter that we've chosen to say, he's the sports people who watched the Rugby League World Cup and thought it was amazing. One of them is one of the Brownlee brothers, noted Rugby League fan. One's Joe Barton, who has now assumed the role of national radio breakfast person who talks about Rugby League.
He
all
does
the time.
Talk about it.
He does. He does. As I've said before, I don't think we should use him to promote the sport and stick him on the front of a magazine, but I like the fact he supports the sport, and that's fair enough. And Johnny Wilkinson. The only one of those three who I'd have made a big issue about is Wilkinson, because he's not a Rugby League person. He's a national sporting icon.
It was a shame we couldn't get Wayne Rooney to endorse the game before it happened. That's where we let ourselves down.
I'd say he was a big fan of the old rugby league as well. Will Greenwood.
He was brilliant.
Very highly.
Absolutely brilliant.
I did enjoy the tweet from the RFU, though, wishing the England team good luck. And I thought, well, it's nice you've found some, you know, gratitude in your heart to wish the rugby league team good well after taking the registration of Denny Solomona when he, you know, illegally...
Did you not see the follow-up tweet? And he said, never mind, lads, if you lose, don't worry, we'll always give you a job.
Yeah. If you're any good, we'll have you.
Yeah.
I still think that's what Tonga put us off in that semi-final by singing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. It put off. So what's going on here? Yeah. I think it's a Rob Andrew-based conspiracy.
Yeah. We'll move on.
For Sam
Burgess. We've done so well.
No, I'm more gutted that we didn't win the World Cup, so we couldn't have shoved it up Rob Andrew, to be honest. More than anything else. We've gone, here's your medal. Stick a finger up. That one finger. Say, look, we've got one medal and you haven't. But we've got to take it down to base level eventually. But
yeah.
What can you do? Clive Woodward tweeted as well.
Yes,
big fan.
Sir Clive. Could have been Sir Wayne, but it will be Sir Brian McDermott.
Two of the Tongans got land, didn't they?
Yes. Right.
Jason Taumalolo.
What? Yeah, they got their own land.
They got feted when they went back to Tonga by the royal family.
Well, big fans of King Tupu the VI on this programme.
And had a huge reception, and were two of them, one of whom was definitely Taumalolo, were given land from the estate.
Home villages, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll get given a bit of Ellen Road.
Think if England had won, the whole of Otley would have been owned by Sam Burgess.
Yeah.
Luke Gale's going to get things thrown at him next season. Tomatoes and stuff. He could have had land. He could have, you know, could have had the land where Cass are going to build a stadium or Wakefield.
All right, come on. Let's not push.
Where's the politicians getting involved in that, by the way?
Yeah, well,
quick to say,
there's no elections now, Rich.
Why are you not talking about rugby league newspapers? Yes, our bloody statement.
I actually asked them the question. I said, forgive me, when they all went down to Wakefield, glad-handing Michael Carr. I said, you will forgive me.
Yes.
But, as a man in the street thinks, you're only here because there's some votes to be won next year. They came, they got the votes.
Never seen him again. Where are you?
Councillor, where have you gone?
I'm like, what's the name now? Delia Smith, where are you?
Let's be having you.
Dawn says, does anyone know if Premier Sports have NRL games next year? We believe
it's going to Sky.
Which would add up with lots of different things. Oh, that's a bit harsh, Dawn. Oh, what Luke Gayle could have got for winning World Cup. That's a bit harsh. Cricket.
I'd say all Judd Trump could do one of them and all.
Claire says Scoy got given Belle Isle. He's already the king of Belle Isle. He's annexed it from the rest of the country.
He is. He's the king, president, like prime minister. Well,
you know, you see North Korea on the telly, there's a big picture of Kim Jong Un. It's like it's a big picture of Scoy out there, that one with his glasses on.
To be fair, the Tongan guys were wearing their national costume, which was fantastic. I have seen Scoy wander down to Aldi in... Belle Isle in his dressing gown. That is the national costume of his house.
Hey, you're pushing it here, Phil. I'm going to take that bit out. 7:51. We'll edit that bit out. We'll tell Scoy next week.
It wasn't just the RFU who lended their support to England. Theresa May, the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the opposition, and the Mayor of London. I don't know about the Lib Dem leader, but no one knows who the Lib Dem leader is.
Can you go play at the London Stadium?
Well, now they've bought it back, haven't they?
Well, Michael can't give him a better rate.
I say, what a national scandal that is. What a shock. we're just going now.
It's a scattergun approach, isn't it? You're going for everyone.
Well, we'll get someone somewhere.
Stuart Pearce, big rugby league fan.
He's
a big Warrington fan.
He's got some big things to worry about now.
He's got big things to worry about, Dave, at West Ham. Dear me. That's Scoey's club, of course. I don't think we ever got to the bottom of why Scoey's a West Ham supporter.
No.
That's,
must have been a freebie.
Yeah, you beat me to it, Phil. You beat me to it.
Got a shirt from somewhere. On who should be the next England coach, obviously I think Brian McDermott for two reasons. A, he's a winner, B, it destabilises Leeds, so everyone's a winner on that one. But
what if it's a part-time post?
We'll have a whip round. It'll be full-time, don't worry.
Felix says Powell can't set sides up for big games. Marty says, I wonder if Bennett would be happy to be assistant to Powell. His work on the defence has been outstanding. Phil says, does Wayne Bennett get excited about anything?
No, I reckon he doesn't.
Not publicly, but apparently he does sit at the back of the bus and tell jokes.
Does he?
On the way to training, yeah. Apparently.
I love his press conferences. I love them.
He's perfected the art, as Sir Alex Ferguson did, of taking all the pressure off his players, because all you target is him. And you don't talk about performance or individuals, because he's only going to give you 40 seconds and you're going to get yes-no answers. And every single player who has been interviewed, particularly Jermaine McGilvery, who's been brilliant throughout the tournament, was fantastic in all the post-match analysis of this World Cup final. He can't speak highly enough of Wayne Bennett. There is something within that dressing room that he brings that we can't understand, because the only bit we see is the terse bloke that will only give you a yes-no answer.
Yeah.
And that's deliberate.
I did put a poll out, actually, on Twitter.
Oh, did you?
About I did it yesterday about should Bennett stay or go, and it was very split. I'll have a look at the old research.
I think
now.
He is divisive, isn't he? But that's because he is who he is. He's a winner.
When the tournament started, if you'd been Nigel Wood and said to Wayne Bennett, The KPI I expect back from you is the minimum to make the final, because that's one step up from where we've been for 22 years, and to be competitive, to give us something that we can latch on to for 2021. He has delivered.
Agreed. I said the only reservation I had about the old Dubai and everything else was he's only here short term. I want him to stay and build and be allowed to build. That's what it needs now. I thought Matt Namara put the pride back into playing for England, because we know what it meant to Scoy and we've seen it from everyone else, but he brought it back as a team rather than St Helens, Leeds, Wigan,
Smith's failing at international level,
so
was that he allowed
it back
the
now, and I think that has been blatantly over every player we've heard from, made friends for life, and you know it will change. And I always remember from the Lions, Ian McGeachan with his famous speech said, you'll see people in this room in 20 years and it'll just be a look that said you were there and you were part of it. And I think that's what England have had this time. Just a shame.
Which is why I'd keep this structure together.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
The only issue is Wayne Bennett is the sort of guy who will say, if you want me for 4 years, I'll only take the job if we have X, Y and Z. And that may involve some negotiation with club chairman that they're not happy to commit to. And the debate becomes solely, is it more important that England win the World Cup in 2021 or that Super League has the structure that the chairman want to maximise their revenue? And you can't have both. Where's the compromise going to come?
Yeah.
We asked earlier if 71 was too old for Wayne Bennett to be coaching at the World Cup. Alan says he'd have had Neil Fox playing at left centre.
At 71?
Yeah. Right, oh my, I got a pass then.
Yeah, he got more than one. 55-45 percentage, keep Bennett. 55, so slightly
which you'd have, if you'd have put that poll out at the start of the World Cup, I reckon it would have been 80-20 if that against him.
Against.
So I think that is a measure of the job that he's done.
Excellent.
Speaking of media coverage, David says there's a great article in the I paper by Johnny Bairstow about the World Cup, yep, and how the Yorkshire cricket team are really into the league. I enjoy the video of the England cricketers ahead of the World Cup with Joe Root being tackled by one of the...
Root and Anderson.
What we could do now is Jermaine McGilvray and Scott Taylor doing a video saying, come on, just your forward defender like this fellas. Yeah.
Yeah. Or perhaps just rush them into the team for the third test before they come home.
Possibly. Yeah. Possibly so.
Good news for Luke Gayle from Paul. He's been given the freedom of the Black Swan in Normanton. That's good news for Luke Gayle there.
Yeah.
Don says, happy for Bennett to stay, but we need an attacking coach to work alongside him. What are Dennis Betts et al? England brains.
You need an attack. We made enough chances to win that game.
We just didn't take them.
In a World Cup final, we restricted Australia to two, and I think we had four. It's the ability to execute under pressure, and that's nothing to do with who the coach is.
You said earlier, Phil, and it's right, the international game is the platform from which we can build everything. Captain Jim has said, we may not have won, but rugby league just got its success. Tweets from high-profile people, it's reflected in the viewing figures. If we as clubs jump all over that, then that's carrying success onwards. Can we rely on the clubs, though, to capitalise on this success? Some, I guess, we can. And I see Leeds sent out a press release earlier today about the World Cup and this and that and the other. So we know that the media department at Leeds are very, very good at these things. And congratulations to Adam Cuthbertson as well on his new job.
Yeah.
Coach of the women's team in the Super League.
Yeah.
I know it would be much easier for the clubs to build on England winning the World Cup and say, come down and watch Super League, Championship, League One rugby or whatever, but still, you know, something to build on. And then Leeds are obviously saying, you can come and see Ryan Hall and Callum Watkins at Elland Road. Big stadium, come watch.
Yeah, cheap tickets.
Yeah.
Selling out.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that more clubs didn't put on a morning to watch the game and sell their merchandise. I know that it was only a week to organise it when you knew England were definitely in the final, but again, I think that's how we've got to be cleverer. Those that own their own stadiums needed to make an event of that England game and sell merchandise on the back of it. It wasn't altruistic that Leeds threw open the Carnegie Cafe. It was because they actually launched their away shirt at the same time. And there were so many people wearing it, it must have worked.
Mm. They're quite good, aren't they, Leeds? At all this. It's very frustrating.
They even sent us a nice message last week.
I'll tell you what, of all the things last... I don't know well up again, but of all the things last... of all the things last
Tough
Wednesday...
Tough week last week, and that was quite nice.
Of all the things, that was the one that got me. Yeah. So thank you very much, Leeds.
Yeah, there you go. But we're here, and we'll be here next week. And we'll be the legend will be here next week as well. Looking forward to that.
Tanned like a crisp, he'll be.
Yeah.
I reckon there'll be more of him coming back.
I think, though, 80% that is more of him will be water or possibly a beer.
I don't know, it's too expensive, wasn't it?
We will see. Right, we are nearly done. That is it. We have done 2 hours tonight because I forgot to play the news, and B, we don't have to play the adverts anymore. Thanks to everyone that's listened. Thanks to everyone that's contributed. We did get stuck in. That's what we're here to do. You know the drill. We do like to talk about all the big things. We might not always agree. That's not what we're here to do. And please, please, please download the podcast. Have a listen back if you've missed any of it. Share it with your friends. Put it out on Twitter. Thanks to Phil, as ever. He'll be back hopefully next week. Hopefully I've not... not scared enough. And hopefully as well, Richard will be back as well. I'm not sure that I've got to press this button. I have. We'll be back next week.